Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. They'll find you the right insurance so you're covered, the best price. And they'll be your advocate all the way through any process. The best advocate you can ask for. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, by the way, 2 weeks from Wednesday to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Afternoon flights gone, but there are openings in the morning. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, the Sixers get it done as they knock out the Nets on the verge of winning the series. Tom McGinnis with a call on the Sixers Network.
Mike Scott along the near sideline, runs out top. Harris cutting to the ball. He goes into Tobias Harris. Harris pulls up, lobs it into Joel. Embiid dropped it to the corner. Mike Scott for the lead. It's up and good. Mike Scott reigns in the corner three, and the Sixers go up by two.
Mike Scott's one of those pros. Tom Moore joins us, Bucks County Courier. Hi, Tom. How have you been?
Fine, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. Well, this has been one of those, quote, chippy series. How have you looked at the Nets and the Sixers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, game two with Embiid. And I, to be fair, I think he was fortunate to not get a flagrant two and not get ejected, you know, with that spin move where he really blasted Allen in the chin and, you know, drew blood in game two. And again, started with Embiid. He said he didn't think he fouled to start that play, but he swung his arm like a fist. And I think that's why even though he didn't get a lot of, you know, didn't get a lot of contact, you know, it was his intent there. But yes, it's been very, very chippy and very physical. And, you know, the Sixers were, I really thought they were going to lose game four. They really were kind of tested, and they figured out a way to pull that one out and, you know, now have potentially two of the next three games at home if they need them to close out the series.
Are you surprised it's been chippy?
Well, I mean, the Sixers, you know, Brett Brown said going into the series that the Sixers, it was going to be a fist fight, and I think the Sixers maybe think that's one of their advantages because, you know, most of their team played last year and they won a series before losing to the Celtics, and, you know, three of the five Nets starters had never been to the playoffs before. Maybe it's fairly new there, so maybe they think they can kind of be bullies a little bit and, you know, take advantage of some of that stuff. But, you know, when you play, have to beat a team four times out of seven, you know, you get really familiar with each other. And, you know, one side thinks the other side's kind of getting the breaks and things like that. But, you know, the Nets, I guess, don't want to back down. And Dudley's an experienced veteran guy, a glue guy, a guy you like having on your team. And when he thought Embiid did something inappropriate for the second time, he called him out on it, and Butler came in there. And then it all, a couple of rows of seats went down, and some fans went to the ground, and referee Eddie Molloy fell down. And it was pretty crazy.
All right, so now let's get to, you know, why the Sixers were up 3-1. Is this just a mere case of the Sixers just flat out have more talent than the Nets?
I think that is. I think they have, whether you want to call it talent or stars or whatever, I think that's a big part of it. And I think, you know, there was a lot of negativity toward Brett Brown at the end of the regular season and after the game one loss. And I think he's done a really good job the last three games kind of making all the right calls. The last 8 minutes, he went really big in the game on Saturday. And, you know, the Sixers, you know, with they went 6-4, 6-8, 6-9, 6-10, and 7-2. And, they, you know, they can switch all the picks and everything like that. And I think it really made a difference. And, you know, he called him out at halftime of game two because he didn't think they were defending and, you know, yelled and screamed. And the Sixers came out and played well and blew out the Nets in the second half of game two. It seems like he's been making the right moves, and they're not getting – the Nets aren't getting the matchups that they want. They were getting, you know, whoever they wanted on J.J. Redick, who's, you know, strength is scoring, but certainly struggles in the man-to-man defense, especially against a quicker guy like Russell or Dinwiddie or LeVert. So, yeah, I think that – I think to make a short story long, I think that is a key part of it, Steve.
Yeah, it's a talk show. We can make any story long. What about the Ben Simmons component? How well has Simmons played in this series? What have the Nets tried to do to throw him off his game, if at all possible?
Yeah, they tried to do what the Celtics did last year in the series, where whoever guards him basically backs up to the foul line. So, you know, kind of packs things in, and they've been able to figure out some things. He's still been able to, after game one, he was able to get to the rim, you know, was really especially effective in games two and three. Still not shooting that mid-range shot, but he's making his free throws more, which is a big thing. They tried a little hack of Ben, I guess it was game three, and he ended up 9-for-11. Which is, you know, well above his season average, which I think was in the mid-60s. So, yeah, he's played very well. I mean, Embiid's just – they're just – you know, it's crazy. The two games he was listed as doubtful, he played. And then the other two games he was questionable, he played in one of those games and didn't play one of them. So I don't know if that means the Sixers don't understand the difference between questionable and doubtful, or if he's such a wild card that they don't know what the deal is. But – you know, I didn't think he was going to play Saturday. Not only does he play, he comes out and just has a monster game, dominates after that fracas midway through the third quarter, you know, makes the key pass to Mike Scott for the go-ahead three-pointer. And, you know, there's some tough matchups the Nets have, really tough, you know, really tough matchups. And if they double him, that means, you know, Harris or Butler or Redick or somebody's going to be open. And the Sixers have done a much better job as the series has gone on of identifying who the open man is and getting him the ball.
You mentioned the Mike Scott three-pointer, and we played it back before we came on. And I mentioned, look, there's a pro's pro. He's not a star, Tom. But what does a guy like that who understands his role, knows the game, what does that mean to a team?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's a sixth or seventh man, depending on how you look at it. He mainly plays power forward. Well, what happened was, if you remember, this was after Butler got thrown out, and James Ennis played that spot for almost the whole quarter, and then a little over 8 minutes to go, Brett Brown put Scott in for Ennis after Ennis picked up his fifth foul, and he played the rest of the game. And, you know, he's not afraid to shoot the ball. It doesn't mean he always makes it, but he's always one of those guys who's willing to take the shot. He's versatile. He's another guy who can switch off onto a guard and, you know, generally not get, you know, beaten off the dribble or whatever. And, you know, Brett Brown needed somebody with Butler out, and he really, really helped. Made a couple key steals, forcing turnovers late in the game with that group in there. And, you know, it's the definition of a team that, you know, as well as Embiid played, they were doubling and tripling him on that play. So he might make the right bobble a little bit, made the right play, kicked it out to Scott right in front of the Sixers bench, and he drilled it.
There was a story today about Steve Kerr and Doc Rivers addressing the next question part of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They ask, now Russell Westbrook shows up in the media room like he's supposed to, but if he's not enamored with the question, he says next question. And then after he was done saying next question, somebody directed a question to Paul George about the dunk at the end against Portland in game three, and he said next question. Hey, what's the cooperation like in the series that you've been covering right now? And does that next question thing, does that become bothersome for a league that is thriving on public, great public publicity right now? Does that become a problem if they start getting like that in press conferences?
Yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, the way I took it essentially, Steve, was that neither Westbrook nor George were essentially, they were not answering basketball questions, essentially, which is normally it's the opposite, where there's an off-court situation and the coach or the player says, look, I'm not talking about that. I want to talk about the game, the opponent, whatever it is. This was kind of the reverse of that, where they were asked about the game, which is generally what players and coaches want to be asked about as opposed to other things. And they said no. See, it's kind of a fine line because they're answering or they're responding. They're not, you know, you get fined if you don't talk to the media after a playoff game. So they're avoiding that, but it's kind of a gray area. Essentially, you might as well not be talking to the media if you're not going to say anything about anything. So, yes, that is something that with a league that is, you know, in the midst of some pretty interesting playoffs and, you know, the East has more depth than the West for the first time in a long time, although the West has the best team in the Warriors. You know, the TV viewership is at a high level. You know, you don't need anything like that, any kind of negative or whatever. So it's kind of an interesting thing to see what happens if that continues. Are there fines? Do they tweak something or whatever? But, yeah, that the NBA certainly is not happy about that.
One final question, I'll let you go, Tom. Are the Sixers right now starting to play their best basketball this season?
I mean, it looks like it. They've only had 13 games since they acquired Tobias Harris in February, where their ideal starting five has played together. So it's kind of a small sample size, but they are, I guess they're 10-3, if I'm not mistaken, in those games. But it seems like it. And the Nets are, you know, are 42-14. They're not a great team, but they're a tough match for the Sixers because they have so many quick guards capable of creating their own shot. So for the Sixers, you know, they were really challenged in game four. They were down six with 5 minutes to go, whatever it was. It looked like they could be in some trouble, and they found out a way. Now, having said that, Toronto in the next round, Toronto's up 3-1, can close out by beating Orlando at home Tuesday night. That's a tough, tough matchup for the Sixers. In the three games that the Sixers have played the Raptors, when Kawhi Leonard has played this season, Simmons has 25 assists and 24 turnovers. He's averaged 8 turnovers a game against Kawhi Leonard. He averages 3.5 in the regular season, you know, generally. So that's a guy who really gives him trouble with his quickness, his hands, his size, his physicality. So Brett Brown's going to have to do something, change something. Simmons is going to have to be more aggressive, get, you know, whatever. When you get no matter who is left in this next round, assuming that the top four seeds win and Boston's already through, Milwaukee, Toronto, the Sixers, that's four. To me, that's four really good teams. Yeah. And the Sixers could be a better team and I think are a better team than they were last year. But there's no guarantee you're going to win a 7-game series with the Raptors when Toronto has home court advantage. So, you know, they're going to have to, as well as they're playing, they're probably going to have to play even better if they plan on advancing.
And that's, if you know the league, you know that Kawhi Leonard is an outstanding physical defender. I think most people just see that he scores points and he's significant in that regard. But as a physical on the ball defender, you and I both know, Tom, he's really good.
He's fantastic. He's 6'7", but he's got long arms. He's got big hands, and he's got. I mean, Simmons will put the ball on the ground, and it's gone.
Right.
So I think it was kind of a wake-up call for him because he's never going against a guy that's almost his size, that is as quick or quicker than him, and as you said, Steve, is just so physical that they're going to have to make some adjustments.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the time today. We really appreciate it.
Sure, Steve. Anytime. Take care.
All right. Tom Moore, Bucks County Courier. We'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Steve Jones, along with a guy that could very well be the next play-by-play voice of Shikellamy football, Matt Cotrillo. Look, I said could be. I didn't say for sure.
Hey, whatever happens, I'm always ready to step in.
See, exactly. That's the attitude we need instead of having the attitude of, you know, it's like it, you know, it's my life job. He's okay. All right. Just kidding. He's a national award winner. Or maybe not national. He's been to parts of the nation. How about that? Yeah, there we go. Okay, let's get to, I know the NFL draft is this week. We've got a lot going on with that. Very quickly, here is the draft list for the NBA. All right, and I'll give you in two parts. We'll go team by team, right? Draft list. These are the people who have declared, and then I'll give you those who are testing. All right, and they've indicated they are testing. Duke, Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish, all in. Marcus Bolden and Javon Delorier are testing the waters. Trey Jones is returning to school. Michigan State, Nick Ward is declared for the draft. He's in. But Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman have both said they're going back to school. North Carolina, Kobe White and Nasir Little have both declared for the draft. Kentucky, P.J. Washington and Tyler Hero have both declared for the draft, but it says Keldon Johnson, EJ, and Keldon Johnson's declared for the draft, too. Okay, he can't ride around a $300,000 car and not declare for the draft. P.J. Washington, Tyler Hero, Keldon Johnson all in, but EJ Montgomery, Nick Richards are testing. Ashton Hagens is returning to school. Kansas, Derek Lawson, Quentin Grimes are testing. Sylvia D'Souza is like, well, says he'll return to school if the NCAA grants the appeal. Azubuike, by the way, is returning to school. Ty Jerome's DeAndre Hunter have said that they will absolutely enter the draft, but Kyle Guy and Diakite are both testing the waters. Grant Williams and Jordan Boone from Tennessee testing the waters. Rui Hachimura, Brandon Clark, they're in the draft from Gonzaga. But Killian Tilly and Zach Norville are testing. Bruno Fernando and Anthony Cowan from Maryland are both testing. Jalen Smith is coming back. Bol Bol is declared for the draft from Oregon along with Louis King and Kenny Wooten. But Peyton Pritchard is going to test it. Michigan, Charles Matthews in. He's going to the draft. Izzy Brazdeikis and Jordan Poole are testing, but Charles Matthews is in. He won't be coming back. Ooh, let's see. Javonte Smart at LSU, shockingly going to the draft. There's a shock. Marquette, Marcus Howard, great scorer. He's going back to school. Carson Edwards in the draft from Purdue. Done. Ayud Dosunmu from Illinois, returning to school. Ja Morant, Murray State, absolutely in the draft. He's declared. Tyus Battle has declared from Syracuse. He's in. But O'Shea Brissett is testing from Syracuse. Indiana, Romeo Langford is in. He's going to the draft. Devontae Green is testing the waters. I can tell you how the test is going to turn out. Caleb Wesson from Ohio State, the big guy, testing the waters. Amir Coffey from Minnesota, testing the waters. Let's see. Aubrey Dawkins, Central Florida, is in the draft. Let's see. Kanate from West Virginia, in the draft. Darius Garland from Vanderbilt, in the draft. Shamari Pons from St. John's, in the draft. Let's see. Markel Johnson from NC State, testing. Lamar Peters, Mississippi State, in, but Reggie Perry testing. Nick Claxton of Georgia, testing. Tevin Mack from Alabama, testing. Isaiah Roby from Nebraska, testing. Tyler Cook, in the draft. Joe Wieskamp, the freshman, is testing. Wieskamp will come back. Be shocked if he went. Kai Bowman from Boston College, testing. Lamar Stevens, testing. From Penn State, obviously, he's testing. Anybody else on this thing? These are the guys. I mean, some people just declared they got the agent, they're done. I think that's the list right there. Give you an idea. Charles Matthews from Michigan's the one that surprised me. So did Nick Ward. I don't know. I thought Nick Ward was going to come back, and I thought Charles Matthews was going to come back. Now, they may have the degrees, especially Matthews. I think people forget Matthews actually started his career in Kentucky, and then he transferred to Michigan. All right. More on the NFL draft. More on the transfer portal. I'm going to be seeing James Franklin tomorrow. First time we've talked in a little more than a week.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's serving this valley for decades, and you do not serve a spot in the globe for decades unless you're really good at what you do and you care about your customer. And they put customer service absolutely first. Whether it's auto, home, life, business, whatever the insurance need may be, they'll find you the best insurance. You're covered. And they will go out of their way to find you the best price. They'll update the policies along the way where need be, because they're always looking for the market trends. And they're always looking to make sure that your insurance lines up with your needs. And if there's ever a claim, you cannot ask for a better advocate than Purdy Insurance. And the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, 2 weeks from tomorrow, will be at Penn's Tavern to do our show there, to set up the tournament. And then 2 weeks from Wednesday, we'll be at the beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Get a hold of the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. There are openings for the morning flight. The afternoon flight's now booked, but openings in the morning flight. So whatever you can do to be involved, I look forward to meeting each and every one of you. It'll be a great time out there, as it always is, at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. It'll be great to see Bonnie and everybody. They do great work. The NFL draft is this week. It is in Nashville. It is a week where there are a lot of mock drafts out there. In the end, mock drafts are not going to mean anything. They are interesting reading, so I will say that. They are interesting reading, as everybody plays their guessing game as to where everything's going to fall. So in my guessing game, I've got Kyler Murray going first overall to the Arizona Cardinals. Actually, there are a couple of mock drafts that show him going as low as 13.
That I don't see.
Right, but for the most part, everybody lines up with what I'm, it has nothing to do with who I think's the best player or anything like that. I'm just thinking about how they're thinking. That's dangerous.
I like that, Kyler Murray. I think he's going to be a good quarterback in this league. I know he's getting a lot of criticism about his character, and he's being undersized, and maybe is he a running quarterback? Is he a pocket passer first? I've had a chance to look at his tape. I think he's committed to being a pocket passer first before being a running quarterback. I think you saw that in a lot of the big games, especially the Big 12 game, especially the Alabama game, and I think his character, I think if you need any example, it's the way he led his team back in that Alabama game in the college football playoff right there.
Sure.
And so I think you put that all together. However, I don't really know if I like the direction the Cardinals are going in, because A, you shouldn't give up on a quarterback in 1 year, let alone a head coach. And I also think Josh Rosen was the best quarterback ready of that draft class from last year. So this is going to be interesting, but this is tricky crossroads here for the Cardinals. I'm not sure if it's going to be the right direction, but we'll see.
What's interesting is the way the Cardinals have handled this so far, is I think they've then hurt their leverage in dealing Josh Rosen. If they're really intent on taking Kyler Murray, they probably could have gotten a second-round pick for Josh Rosen. Right now, they may not get better than a third because of how they handled it. You know, you're sitting there as another team saying, you're not going to play him, so why should we give you a two?
Yeah, it definitely seems that way now. One team, though, to keep an eye on, your New York Giants.
They have picks at 6, 17, and 37. I think, my opinion is, I think the Giants are going in the trenches on 6. Now the door opens at 17 for a quarterback if you want. But I think they're going in the trenches at 6.
And I think that's exactly what they should do, because they need the trenches the most as much as they need a quarterback. And if I'm the Giants, I'm trading for Josh Rosen, because now I'm probably only going to give up a third-round pick now, it looks like. And I'm going to attack the trenches, both sides, especially offensive line. We all know, you and I both know that, but I think they need both sides too.
Well, I think an edge rusher would really help the Giants. I think if they got an edge rusher, if a Josh Allen, for example, of Kentucky were to fall to them, that you've got to go with that pick.
Dexter Lawrence, too. I've seen a lot of mock drafts to them, too, at 17.
Yep. Now, again, I'm talking at 6, though. If they can get that kind of guy at 6, now you can flip over and you can then make the argument at 17 of Dwayne Haskins, or do you make the argument at 37 for Drew Lock? So there's a lot there. Ed Oliver is an interesting pick in this group. Quinn and Williams, Devin White, the linebacker from LSU, Jonah Williams. A lot of people think he is cable ready now. T.J. Hockenson. See, the issue, it's not an issue. It's just, it is what it is. But this is not a, quote, sexy draft. Last year was a sexy draft. Do you take Baker Mayfield? Do you take Sam Darnold? Do you take Josh Rosen? What about Josh Allen? What about Lamar Jackson? Saquon Barkley, he's the second overall pick in the draft. You know, big names, big positions, okay? Hand on the ball. As opposed to this draft, yes, Kyler Murray. And then your next picks could end up being a defensive end, a defensive tackle, another defensive tackle, a linebacker, a defensive end, offensive tackle, a tight end, an offensive tackle, a linebacker. See, again, this is a very functional draft. A functional draft. You've got some very good players that are going to help teams win, but it's not a sexy draft. You know, it's not quarterback heavy. It's not running back or wide receiver heavy. I think the Steelers, for example, if he's available, go for Greedy Williams of LSU. I mean, if he's sitting, I know he's a man guy, and the Steelers are a lot of two deep, but I'd go there. And if I were the Eagles, I really, really like the spot they're in. Now, I know they need another wideout wouldn't hurt them. Another linebacker would not hurt the Eagles. And another running back wouldn't hurt the Eagles. But they're picking 25. And they have a roster in Philadelphia that, in my opinion, is in very, very good shape. The Eagles literally, in my opinion, can go for best player available at 25.
Totally agree.
They can go for the best player. So whomever's left on that board, I've listed them 1 through 30. You can listen if you're 25. So you list them 1 through 25. They're not all going to be gone. I mean, it may be 20 of the 25 are gone when you're there. Then you look around and say, okay, on our board, who's the best guy up there left? Of the first 25 guys we put up there. And I think the Eagles can do that. They are in a spot where they can literally pick, in my opinion, the best player available. They don't have to be position specific.
Couple scenarios I view for the Eagles, Steve. I think, one, their number one priority right now, if they can make it happen, I think they have the ammo, is to trade up for one of those linebackers you just mentioned. They have 2 twos and they have 2 fours. I think that's enough ammo to move up a couple of spots to try and get one of those linebackers. Or
that is an interesting point you bring up. 2 twos and 2 fours.
Exactly.
I think this draft is so deep, Matt, in terms of, like, I mean, deep in certain positions, obviously, that you're going to get good value in 2 and 4 if you keep your picks.
It's also true.
I I think here's a team. Well, I'll give you a team. I think the Giants draft wise, it's at 6, 17, 37. They're in good shape draft wise. Let me give you the other team that is in great shape draft wise, considering this draft. And you're going to hate this. They've got 6 picks between 32 and 101. The New England Patriots.
There you go.
They have 6 picks between 32 and 90 and 101.
And they'll probably get more because they didn't do this last year when they drafted Sony Michel, but usually they like to trade out of the first round, especially if they have the 32nd pick or 31st pick, whatever they've had the last 3 years.
Well, they may not have to, though. In other words, they have so many picks now between 32 and 101, they may want to keep what they have and stockpile talent. Yeah, because they've already done this to get themselves into this spot, and they've got a draft that in many spots, not all, but in many spots, is actually has some depth. They may not be awesome in credit. There's probably 20 legitimate first-round picks in the draft. It'd be first-round picks any year, anytime, whatever. Then after that, you got a bunch of twos, threes, and fours there. Well, guess what? You can stockpile some talent with 6 picks between 32 and 101.
And what's scary for New England, too, Steve, is this defensive line class, as we've been talking about, they can use that because of the amount of depth they have, and that's probably their biggest need. They get that, I mean, they're pretty much right back in the conversation if they didn't leave it already.
Right, and I think that's where they are. I'm going to bring it back to the Eagles now. 2 twos and 2 fours. Now, they can play a game, but I would not count out. You talk about the Patriots moving down. The Eagles could move down.
Right, I've heard that scenario, too. I'm really surprised by that.
But you would allow them to stockpile more picks where they know that the value they're going to get where they're picking is going to be, in their mindset, based on position, comparable. That's a possibility. Now, the Steelers, I do not expect the Steelers to trade down. As usual, I expect the Steelers to be firmly entrenched in the spot they're always in. You're picking 20, we're not moving. I think in the end, I know he has a couple of character concerns, but Greedy Williams of LSU.
I could see that.
It's now the Redskins. Will the Redskins move to get Dwayne Haskins? They pick 15. Now, at 15, they're still ahead of the Giants, who are at 17. But I'm wondering if the Redskins pick Haskins, do the Giants then immediately pick Drew Lock? Or if the Cincinnati Bengals pick Haskins, now what do the Redskins do? Because the Bengals could pick Haskins too.
Yeah, that's going to be really, really fascinating.
Remember, Andy Dalton is going into a contract year.
And he stinks, in my opinion. It's time to move on from him if you're Cincy.
He's just not as good as the other guys. He doesn't stink, Matt. He's just not as good as the other guys.
Oh, we'll go with that, sure. All right. Either way, Cincy's going to be in the bottom of the AFC North this year.
They're going to struggle this year. I mean, that's the best thing going for the Steelers right now. They won't finish last.
Exactly, right. I'd say one other point I'd say with the Eagles would be I won't hate them trading down if it means that they're going to dress the trenches, whether it's an offensive tackle or a defensive lineman. Yeah. But I really think if Josh Jacobs of Alabama is on the board at 25, which it sounds like he may be, which slightly surprises me, then the Eagles, yeah, I think, ought to jump on him and take him.
Again, people, Barkley aside, I think Zeke Elliott being picked at 4 overall by the Cowboys and having really, really good success in the NFL opened the door for the Giants to be confident in picking Barkley at 2 last year. It's a copycat league. If Elliott had been drafted by the Cowboys and had fallen flat on his face, I'm wondering if it would have affected where Saquon was drafted last year. But the fact is that Elliott came in and had such a profound effect on the Cowboys and their success, I think it made the Giants' selection of Barkley easy last year, saying he can have the same kind of success for us because he's an even better back than Elliott is. And he is a better back than Elliott. I mean, he just is. And now, I mean, does Barkley open the door for somebody else? I'm not sure. You can get running back quality in the second and third round. You can get Miles Sanders probably in the third round. I saw a draft listing on The Athletic today. They have Miles Sanders at 76, and they had Connor McGovern at 84 of their top 100. The surprise to me is that Amani Oruwariye was not in this guy's top 100 list. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, let me give you another Steeler potential. How about Rakia Sin from Temple?
That'd be excellent value. That kid can play. That kid is a ball hawk and has excellent ball skills.
Now, there aren't many people on the face of the earth. They're going to sit there and go, okay, he's from Temple, and he transferred from Presbyterian College. But Mike Tomlin has personally been scouting this guy. He's almost 6 feet tall and is a very physical football player. So Rakia Sin could be another guy. And look, I know, and I've talked to Tommy Bradley about this, they had Tommy scouting as many DBs as possible. I mean, they've sent him out to scout as many as possible. So I'm not surprised with if White and Bush are both gone when the Steelers pick at 20. And you and I both know they will be. And we both know the Steelers are not moving up to get anybody. That they will then have to settle for the next position on the board, and that's corner. Rakia Sin could be that guy. If the Eagles stand pat, the Eagles can pick the best guy on the board they want. Okay? If they think Marquise Brown is the best, the wideout, if they think he's the best guy, pick him. If they happen to think that Metcalf's the best, pick him. If they think it's one of the running backs, pick him. I mean, I think that the Eagles are in a great spot. They can literally pick the best available player on the draft.
I wouldn't hate DJ Metcalf for the Eagles either. Good size. Obviously, we saw the speed in the combine. Really, his athletic ability in general, hands too. I thought he really performed well in Indy.
Now, the problem Metcalf has is Metcalf is not great in terms of he's great on straight line separation. He's not great on route running separation. So that's going to be the issue with him. Route running separation versus straight line separation. That right now is the knock on him. The NFL schedule came out. Were you shocked to see the Giants are playing at Dallas?
No, I feel like that happens almost every year.
2012. Oh, these are the season openers. 2012, Cowboys at New York. 2013, Giants at Dallas. 2015, Giants at Dallas. 2016, Giants at Dallas. 2017, Giants at Dallas. 2019, Giants at Dallas.
Same with Eagles Redskins, too. They opened up the season not too long ago at Washington. But this time it's in Philly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Steelers at New England again, too, for a Sunday night to open up the season.
Yeah.
Did you do the old W and L's for the Giants schedule?
No, I never do that. I don't even pay attention to that.
See, I love doing that, but
see, every time I go to speak someplace, I'm always asked of how many games do you think Penn State will win? Now, the reason I don't give that is that say I say Penn State is, let's just pick a number, 11-1. What's the next question? Who's the one? Then all of a sudden it gets out, Steve Jones says they're going to lose to. Oh, yeah, that's a really good look.
I can see that from your perspective, yeah.
Yeah. All right. The last time I did it was 2005. And remember, they were coming off a 3-9 in 2003 and a 4-7 in 2004. Well, Jack Ham and I had gone to a bunch of practices. This is 2005. And the two of us walked away and we're like, yeah, you know, we looked at each other like, we're pretty good. So Jack, I was driving down and Jack and I were talking on the phone as I was driving down to speak. It was in Harrisburg. And Jack said, what do you think? I said, geez, I think they could win 11 games. And Jack said, I got 11 and one. So when I'm at the speaking engagement, I'm taking a series of questions. I said, what record do you think Penn State will have? I said, you know, Jack Ham and I think that this team is capable, based on what we've seen, it being 11-1. They acted as if I needed to be taken away in a straitjacket, because they've been 4-7 the year before. They finished 11-1.